Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Winners and sinners. On the Hard Shoulder.
This is Winners and Sinners, the first Winners and Sinners of 2026. Just another 51 weeks to fill here, folks. You are very welcome, Saoirse Hanley and Gerard Gilroy. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
How are you?
I should give you your full titles. Gerard Gilroy from Off the Ball and Saoirse Hanley, writer for the Irish Independent. Let's start with your winner, Saoirse.
Yes, my winner this week. And I feel like it probably comes up every couple of months that I have a cinema-related winner. But this week in particular, it is January cinema trips. I say this every year. January is the best time to go to the cinema, aside from the fact no one can afford it. But once the money problem aside, it is the best time to go. Every good film for the year seems to kind of front load and come out in January. And I actually can't keep up with my own like hunger for films that I want to see. I was there last weekend. I'm going tomorrow. There's two more that I want to see before the month is out. I can't keep up.
Why? Why is it so good in January as opposed to, you know, November?
I don't know what it is about.
The
maybe?
The Oscar,
it's like Oscars.
All the good films have to be out around this time.
Yeah, so there is that, right? So they do actually purposely launch movies at this time because they know there is the appetite there. Everybody's trying to watch their pennies, stay indoors, maybe stay out of the pubs, etc. But there's something, I think, for you that's more than that, more than just the quality of the movies.
It just seems to be. I mean, for me, it's nice because, like that, it's something to do that's not going out drinking. It's also something to do that's inside, away from the cold. But I think I am very much a cinema goer. I would say that it's a very regular hobby of mine, if we can call it that. And I was talking about this in the office the other day because I was on about I was just going to see Mighty Supreme that weekend, and I was so excited about it. And
you liked it?
I loved it. It was insane. I didn't know where it was going, but it was fantastic. It's like coming out of it like you've had three shots of espresso. It's fantastic. But I was talking about it in the office, and one of my colleagues, Rory, was saying to me that he's not been to cinema in 2 years. He couldn't even recall the last film he had seen in the cinema, which is unfathomable for me. I'm flat out going. And it
like how frequently are we talking here, Saoirse?
Like a couple times a month, easy, I'd say.
Every month?
Oh, yeah. Unless it's like a really slow month where nothing's come out. There have been months like that, say like sometimes in the summer or... You know, there's definitely periods where I'm there less, but I would be a very regular goer. And I thought everyone was, but it's come to my attention that not everybody is.
What is it about going to the cinema as opposed to watching it at home that you love?
I think it's too easy to get distracted at home. I really do. I think like when you're in the cinema, and this is apparently not a rule because everybody's breaking it, you're not meant to be talking and you're not meant to be on your phone. People still do. I've found more and more people are doing that. But traditionally...
Do you stop them? Do you intervene?
I am the most passive-aggressive coffer you've ever sat in the cinema with. But I'm like, my problem is I'll be gearing up to say something.
Sure.
And my heart's going and I'm like, yeah. I need to say something right now.
But then do you do the stare?
Oh, I do such a stare. It's a cutting scare if they even were looking up from their phone for a sec to look at me. But the etiquette has gone completely downhill. But I think there is that it's such immersion, which I think is good. Like there's a lot of films that come out that I would watch at home down the line when they come out on streaming. And a few times I'll say to myself, God, like, I wish I had seen that, you know, I wish I'd seen it not the right way, but the way that, you know, the most impactful way on the biggest screen with the best sound, surrounded by people who also hopefully want to be seeing that.
Ger, are you a cinema goer?
Going to see Anaconda this weekend. Really looking forward to that.
When was the last time you were in the cinema?
It's a good question. I have seen some awful stuff. The kids, it's well, only
I was going to say, yeah. Other than taking your children to the cinema, when was the last time you chose to go yourself, or you went with your wife or met a mate?
I went to see Oppenheimer, but I had an empty house and I went and watched it on the biggest available screen and had to go to the loo in the middle of it and missed the bomb.
It's like leaving the Titanic with 20 minutes to go.
Well, at least there, you know.
Well, I do have sympathy in that for that reason, that obviously I think if I had kids, it must be, you have to weigh up whether it's worth getting a babysitter, right, to go to the cinema.
It suddenly adds a huge amount of expense. And then if you have to bring the kids, well, that's the same price as the babysitter.
Well, see, this is one of the things, right, that kind of puts me off going to the cinema. I find it pretty pricey.
Yeah, it is.
And I am one of those people, I'm going to put my hands up now. I'm not paying you like a tenner for a box of popcorn. I'm just not doing it. I'm going to take it with me. I'll shop outdoors.
Yeah.
You do it every time.
Every time, yeah. And I didn't grow up in a household of buying popcorn in the cinema at all. Like, we would always take it with us. But it's one of these things that I've just decided I like paying for. I'm a glutton for punishment, apparently.
So, like, the whole visit, which I know is more than that. That's sort of your socialising. That's your night out. What are you talking? 30 quid?
I'd say like 22. Probably, I feel. Because the ticket's normally about €15 realistically. And then, unless you're getting like a really good deal in the middle of the week or something. And then a popcorn usually is like €5.50, six something.
You see, I do think for parents who have kids that require a babysitter, right? If you are going to fork out the €50 or €60, you're going to look for something more than a movie that you can potentially
you
walk
booze.
At home.
That's what you want, isn't it?
Like, but you can get that. You can go to certain cinemas.
Well,
I imagine it's got to feel more worth it, though. Whereas for me, if I went to sit in a film and it was bad and I came home and I was like, oh, I kind of regret spending the money on that. That's all I spent on. Do you know, it's not like I didn't waste, say, a night out on it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if I had kids, it would be a different story. So no, I do have to for the parents.
It's the risk reward is very high. You kind of need to be guaranteed that it's going to be like Oppenheimer, where everybody is going to be talking about this for the next 5 years. Like, okay, I can justify that.
Yeah.
But if the film's bad and you've got a babysitter, you're like, oh, God.
Refund.
Yeah. But you know what is absolutely joyful? And I did it once, I think, only. And I think I might have been on maternity leave before I had the baby. I went to the cinema by myself in the afternoon.
It's best. Yeah.
Now that is money well spent.
Yeah,
there is something really indulgent about that.
Sneaking into the IFI on a wet Tuesday afternoon when you were a student. That was heaven.
Those were the days. Do you always plan in advance what you're going to watch? Or do you just turn up at the cinema and say, look, I'm here for the experience, not necessarily the movie?
I think there's only once or twice that I've just kind of gone and seen what's on. And that would be, say, you know, if I was doing nothing on a Friday night and I was like, I'd love to actually just go to the cinema and see something. But normally it's because I usually know going in what is I want to watch. I actually end up booking it like quite, I'm actually quite a stressful person to attend the cinema with, because I'm very, very particular about seats. And I have a very strong policy that if you come in late and the lights are off, stop looking for a seat, just sit in the front. You're too late. You're not going to get a good seat.
Are you not booking seats?
You will see if you go to like the Lighthouse, say in Dublin, you can't.
Okay.
And that's what really stresses me, because I like, if I'm booking in advance and like that, that's kind of led me to that thinking. If I know the film I'm going to, I know what day I'm going, and I've booked my seat, I can relax. But if I know it's coming up and I haven't got a seat, my poor long suffering boyfriend last weekend before Mardi Supreme in the Lighthouse tried to suggest that, because we were quite early, which is always the way with me, and he was like, we're way too early, will we go get a drink down the road? And my eye was twitching, because I was like,
you couldn't relax yourself.
We're here now, we could just sit in the lobby, couldn't we, for 45 minutes? Wouldn't that be nice?
45 minutes in advance of a movie.
We would never
be friends,
and we still got perfect seats. So
okay, what's your winner this week, Jer?
We are the winner this week.
Who's we? This room?
Just this,
exactly,
room.
News Talk, all of our listeners in the hard shoulder.
I'm quoting you a line here from Dermot Faraday's piece today in the Irish Times: the achievements have far outweighed the missteps, ensuring radio status as the most trusted medium in Ireland. I'm like, yeah, take a lap of honour, everybody. Congratulations. Radio in Ireland is 100 years old. And the piece is largely about another organisation down the road here. But, you know, we can bask in the reflected glory. There is actually some really interesting stuff about the history of radio. And I remember Miola Mura Hartig doing a presentation somewhere where he talked about the first time that the sports commentaries would happen, and the line between Croke Park and the then 2RN broadcast centre was the GPO, and like it was an actual physical line that led from Croke Park, which is why one of the first ever broadcasts of a live sports event, I think, was an All-Ireland final And it must have been Micheál O'Hara gets referenced in Dermot Farrady's piece today. And it was like, I didn't know any of this stuff. You know, you're kind of, you get into the industry, you work in it, and you're like, it just is, it just exists now the way it always did. But like somebody somewhere built the first transmission network for radio to happen in Ireland. And as ever, the politicians were like, 5.5 hours a day. We're not going to give you any money until we find out how many people buy licenses to actually finance it. So it was like, well, why would you buy a license for a thing that doesn't exist? It's like, on faith, we're going to make good programs and you'll want this. And like, well, what are they going to be? Like, we don't know because we've got no money to invest in it. Obviously, they have survived and they've done relatively well.
And then some, the line in it though that I think is really interesting is that it's the most trusted, right? And trust is something that's in short supply these days, I think, when it comes to media. Why do you think radio is still seen as being credible?
I think it's hard to mask sincerity in someone's voice. You can tell if someone is bullshitting you pretty quickly from the sound of their voice. In print, people can be sarcastic. You can miss a tone. On TV, I think we've become sceptical over the years of spin and all that kind of stuff. That's not to say there isn't loads of people lying to you on the radio on a daily basis. There are.
There's plenty of spin too.
Yeah. It's just that I think maybe we're more attuned earlier in our lives to being able to interpret. I think there's a hesitation there in what you've done. There's a pause in how you're speaking to me. But the inflection of your voice changed there. Why was that? This is pure pop psychology on my part, by the way. So I don't know. I don't know what...
You're saying, like, this is from the listeners, that they're sort of actively listening to what's going on in the radio or on the radio, and they are able to deduce sort of the credibility of the person or the subject matter.
I think so. I think also in Ireland, we've been quite fortunate in the way that the regulations have been applied. What was the BAI before they were the BAI, and then they're the BAI, and now they're Commissioner Naman. Was it the RT? Anyway,
we're very young, Ger. I'm afraid.
We plural, royal we. I think that regulation in Ireland was very intense for a long period of time, in the way that it wasn't in America, for example, and in the UK. And in Australia, they deregulated much quicker than we did. And as a result, you could buy political advertising and you could express opinions and you have this lack of balance. Whereas actually in Ireland, local radio is incredibly strong. We're very interested in what's going on down the road. The death notices meant that people were tuning in every day. There's like a culture of good people working in radio, and it's an industry that has new people in, and it doesn't have as many barriers to entry as some others. And it hasn't been as protected maybe by nepotism as some other industries have done.
In what way do you think, Saoirse, it has changed over the last 100 years? Or has it largely actually stayed the same? And are you surprised as a younger person by this relationship that people in Ireland still have with radio, given the TikTok streaming social media age that we all live in?
Well, I think because of that point, because it is the kind of TikTok brain rot age that we're in now, particularly for younger people, I think that maybe the gamification of some radio things that you have, kind of things like, you know, you have literally games that exist on the radio that people tune in for, that they get fun out of, that they enjoy. I think maybe that's different to how it would have initially operated. But I know myself, like, I remember listening, I used to listen to the radio going to school every day when I was in, maybe first, second, third year. So I was like 13, 14. And I think a lot of the stuff that I listen to now would be largely very similar. It hasn't had to change too much. But I do think having to keep up with that kind of what's happening online and what's happening from a social media perspective, I think having that woven into the content that is coming out in radio is a big part of that. But I do think, to your point, Jer, about the trust, I think, like that, being able to just hear people speak, and with different accents, with different dialects, of different ages, representing different backgrounds, I think because people can very much concretely hear that, or they know that, or they know who their presenters are, I think that helps kind of feed into that and keep it popular and keep younger people tuning in. A lot of young people have like big dreams of being in radio and doing all of these things. So I think that's very enduring.
Okay, we did all of our winners, our cinema trips, you talking about your love of radio. Yeah. We just basically slapped ourselves in the back there for the last 5 minutes. Let's go to the sinners of the week. Your sinner of the week. And I think most people would expect this to come up at some stage, Saoirse.
Yeah, it's got to be X, hasn't it? It's got to be, which I actually still refer to as Twitter. I probably shouldn't, but it's got to be X. Obviously, in all the headlines this week, because the AI, I don't know, is it an AI assistant? AI? I'm a huge AI hater, so I can't even say I know the right terminology. But the built-in AI to X, Grok, has basically got this functionality where I could post, you know, I could post a picture of myself on my graduation day, say, and someone can comment on it and ask Grok to repost the picture, but without any of my clothes on. And it'll do that. And it'll just send that out, no problem. And it'll be as if I posted a nude of myself in a graduation cap for some reason on X. And it is doing this for celebrities, for regular people. It doesn't necessarily stop doing it when there is a young person or a minor involved in the picture. And there's a big backlash now this week because basically we don't know what to do with it and how to get it to stop doing that. And Elon Musk doesn't seem to want to do much about it. And apparently, you know, the it's a difficult one for Ireland or the EU to tackle, say, because, you know, what can you do about that? It's obviously, I think, run away a small bit with, it's run away from us a small bit that it's getting into this bigger and bigger beast that's harder to control. But I think between that and just the general attitude that has existed on X in the past while, I myself have kind of done the full life cycle of, you know, I've been on it for over a decade. I was very involved on it. I really liked it. As I became a journalist, it became a very important tool for me. And now it's gone right back around to being something I completely avoid for the most part, because it's either going to be, everybody's worst opinion is there all the time. And I notice it under, you know, videos that get posted from other, you know, news outlets or my own stories that get posted or anything is just ripe for absolute hatred and horribleness and nothing that you ever want to see said about yourself online. So I just think, like many, I mean, Women's Aid in Ireland said they were coming off the platform this week, and I think many, many, many others will be following suit. It's just bad.
And it's more than bad, actually, when it comes to using Grok to undress images of minors. Yeah. It's actually illegal. There's a criminal aspect to all of this. Meanwhile, Grok soars to the top of the Irish app download charts this week, dear. Go figure.
Yeah. All publicity is good publicity. Is that their perspective on that? Is that it'd be really interesting to see the age profile of those. I don't fully understand how app download charts work. Are they like actually the most downloaded this week, or have they seen the biggest growth in number of downloads? You know, sometimes these things aren't as terrifying as they are portrayed. It'd be really interesting to see a criminal conviction made sooner rather than later. I see one of the ministers today saying that it's up to the individuals who are asking the stuff to happen, which sounds like complete nonsense to me. If you're facilitating the exposure of child pornography, then you must be responsible. And the if we were,
and that's the argument, isn't it? If like, the MSM, the mainstream media, were facilitating this,
they'd be held accountable.
They'd be held accountable, and everybody would really support that, and everybody would want to see that, and that would be the right thing to do. But what is going on here is it that they are frightened to pursue X and Grok. They are incapable of pursuing them. The relationship with the US is too important. They're going to say, actually, you know what? We're not covered by EU laws because Grok is actually a US company, not a European company. I mean, what is it?
They've always been useless at reports anyway. You could report. I mean, I did a research project a few years ago on the hate that female journalists in the country were facing when they posted things online, and a large part of the hate was coming from the platform, from X, from just the users there. It was just the most populated at the time, and 9 times out of 10 they would say, you know, I got these death threats, or I got these threats of this or that or whatever it is, and I reported it and it came to nothing. And I used to have a hobby of reporting bad tweets all the time because I was like, this is so upsetting that this is here, and you'd report it and it would obviously be in violation, and then I get the report back saying we don't see a problem, or we can't take this down. So I think even on a smaller level, even that has been hard to regulate.
And I think one of the arguments, isn't it, like you can't prosecute a shop for selling a knife if that knife is used to stab an individual as opposed to butter bread.
Really.
You know, that is the argument that's put forward.
Yeah, and look,
at times, look, one of the answers here is just to exit X, isn't it? A mass exodus.
Yeah, I do understand the impetus behind that, but is there nothing that we should make a stand on and try and save? And I realise like what we're talking about here is trying to save Elon Musk ultimately. But there was an aspect where it was a useful tool, where people could uncover and have conversations.
Are you still an active user?
Well, I've largely stopped posting. I would only ever post stuff that is entirely work related, and like it's still a great source of immediate information about stuff that's just happened. If a goal happens in a match you're not watching, it is immediately available for you.
And big political stories, it's still probably one of the first places I go.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, is doing that saying that you are complicit in what's happening with the use of Grok, which it may well be, but like, is there not also a world in which at some point it gets back to what it used to be? Maybe that's completely
naive. I'm hoping
naive.
For that. I think I'm
is it
I'm
is X fixable or is it damaged?
I think probably Musk's agenda involves continuing to own a platform like that. So the notion that he'll give it up for whatever reason is probably fanciful. In the long run, like, he's getting a lot of data and information from that, which the AI is being trained on. And what is the purpose of that AI? I don't know. I mean,
let's plug out all the AI, please. I've been saying this for a long time now. Just go back to the source. Take it out.
Okay, let's go to your sinners of the week before I get any more anxiety off the back of that particular conversation.
Yeah, like, look, the sinners this week, do you want Russia? Do you want the US? It's horrific. Do you want the local news here? It's been one of those. It's been an abominable, terrifying start to the new year. So I'm talking about some far more mundane, right?
I know, we're only 9 days in to January. Just want to point that out there in case anybody's wondering.
Well, can it get any worse? I mean, it can.
It can.
Brilliant story in The Guardian today with a headline on the front page, which was like, Netherlands thinking of following Ireland and making fireworks illegal. And I was like, wait, what? You forget that fireworks are illegal in Ireland all over the country on New Year's Eve. All the ones that were left over from Halloween. Halloween is just like this parade from July all the way through until about 2 weeks after middle of November. There's just constant fireworks. There's a brilliant, the North Circular, the movie, the documentary opens with this incredible scene and it's like a war zone and then fireworks are illegal in Ireland comes up and you just forget. I'd totally forgotten it. Well, there's a brilliant, horrific opening to the piece in The Guardian today. Window rattling explosions turned Yara Bastabo Street into a war zone last week, but she was spared from the worst of the New Year chaos she'd seen in the past. A few years ago, the emergency doctor in Amsterdam had to treat a patient clutching their own eyeball after a firework blew it out of its socket. I was like, maybe we should ban the fireworks.
Okay, so that's pretty horrifying, and I'm sure there are similar stories here. Does it shift public opinion, though, when it comes to fireworks, Saoirse?
I'm surprised they're as popular as they are, because, as I say, they should be harder to get, but it's not stopping people. I mean, I used to live in Dublin 8, and any time New Year's, Halloween was always just like peppered at fireworks for weeks and weeks. And Halloween just gone, I was taking a bus through Thomas Street, and like that, the bus stopped and the door opened, and I was actually shot. You close your eyes, you think you're in a war zone, genuinely. And I'm really scared of them. So I think the fact that they're already illegal, and like you said, we're completely unaware of that fact because they're so ubiquitous when it comes to these big events, I would be quite surprised if... I think it would take a lot to actually crack down on them and get rid of them, because they're coming from somewhere. And like that, the leftovers are used for weeks after. I was walking past a park recently and a bunch of lads were in there firing them off. And I feel like I want to go in finger wagging and be like, be careful now of your hands and toes and fingers and noses and apparently
your
eyeballs. But if I was at a party and someone produced a firework, I would have to leave. I'd be out of there so fast.
But is that because they're illegal or is that because you're scared of them?
Because they're scary.
Would you think twice about attending, you know, your neighbour's house?
I wander around Halloween and they're looking and, oh, that one's amazing, that one's great. It's like, we're such hypocrites. Largely, I would say, certainly I am.
I think, to be fair, most people are. And I think it's because the first point you made is true. A lot of people actually forget that they're illegal in this country, or they kind of think they're legal on Halloween and they're legal suddenly on the 31st of December for 5 minutes at, you know, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of anybody having them confiscated or, you know, prosecuted.
Do we want to see that enforcement?
No.
Let's be honest, do we?
You don't want to see anybody being in prison for, I had 10 bangers.
What are you in for?
Exactly. Particularly with the overcrowding situation that we have. But it's just interesting that the Dutch are like, we've had enough of this. It's bad for the environment. They're really dangerous. Two people were killed in the Netherlands I'm like, that seems like that's bad, right? People dying from fireworks is bad.
I think bad. Can,
but I don't know, does, I mean, is making things illegal, does that work?
Well, according to Ireland, no. No, so good luck with that. Netherlands, let us know how you got on in a couple of years.
We use drugs as much as we use fireworks in Ireland, probably, comparatively to everybody else, so.
Oh, I would say we use a lot more, actually. We only see fireworks really two or three times a year. Okay, let's leave Sinners there for now. And we're going to come back with more after this break.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
You're very welcome back to the final part of Winners and Sinners. And I'm still joined by Saoirse Hanley, writer for the Irish Independent, and Ger Gilroy from Off the Ball. I'm going to come to you first, Ger. You have a bit of a rattle there in your chest, do you?
Yeah, still have a bit of a chest infection, which I got essentially the day I finished up before Christmas, and it just started to clear up this week, so I was able to come back to work. But I guess...
Oh, great. So your 2 weeks of Christmas leave was spent sick.
I'm no longer,
I love when that happens.
I'm no longer contagious. I think this is essentially the old person's version of what you were talking about a bit earlier, Saoirse, where, you know, January is a month where you get to go out and watch loads of movies over Christmas. I had nothing to do except sit back and watch loads of movies. So in no particular order, some recommendations for you. Von Ryan's Express with Frank Sinatra, unbelievable ending. Oh my God, you have to watch the whole way through, which you're like, I'd never heard of it.
No.
That's the joy of this. You've Got Mail. Have you seen You've Got Mail?
I watched that for the first time about 2 months ago.
Lovely movie.
It was great.
I wanted better for Meg Ryan's character by the end, I have to say.
The catfishing element of it?
I just don't know if the spoiler alert, I don't know if the Tom Hanks love interest was the one for her. I think they were fundamentally incompatible and I don't think we resolved that enough. And didn't she end it with like her mother's lovely bookshop just being gone and she's like, that's okay because I'm in love with Tom Hanks now.
Oh, I clearly do not remember the detail of that movie
hours into
at all
when I watched this. So yeah. I could have been delirious at that point.
No, I think there, but at the same time, I thought it was really well put together.
Aside from that ending, I did think I enjoyed the vibes of it. Loved the New York setting.
If you do look back at most of the romance stories where guy gets girl, there's a lot of problematic stuff.
Yeah,
that one is just for me. It was just on the inside of it. There is a significant element of catfishing where you're like, oh, he knows now. Halfway through.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of email catfishing, though.
Rear Window. I hadn't watched the whole thing. It's James Stewart. Again, Peeping Tom element to it.
Questionable choices here. What's next?
Well, that was a Hitchcock one. Ben-Hur, right? So I'm watching Ben-Hur with my son, saying there's a great chariot scene in this. And then I'm like doing some research. And they got Gore Vidal to rewrite it so that it's totally homoerotic for the first hour and didn't tell Charlton Heston. I'm like, these lads are like holding each other's gaze for a long time here. There's a lot of like, they've got hands on each other's muscly arms there. I'm like, what's going on here? And then you're like, a bit of Googling. It's like, Charlton Heston accepting the Oscar refused to give Gore Vidal any credit for it as one of the writers because he was like, no, there was nothing untoward about this whatsoever.
I feel like I need to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah. It's
a classic. And then The French Connection, obviously sensational stuff.
Gene Hackman.
The incredibly racist Gene Hackman. Irish, of course.
Do you have a list of comfort movies? Like, were these revisits, rewatches?
Like,
were these brand new?
You let it come to you. It's like going to the cinema and going, what's on? So Von Ryan's Express just happened to be on that Saturday afternoon. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this. I'm really glad I did. Because I'd seen Frank Sinatra in Guys and Dolls. No, what's the gambling one? Maybe it is Guys and Dolls. And he was terrible. It was 10 years previous. By the time Von Ryan's Express comes along, I think he's kind of decided that he's not going to be a movie star. He's going to be an okay actor, and he's an okay actor in that and carries it off.
What other things caught your eye or made you sit up and think this week, Saoirse?
Well, I had a realisation about myself last night that I always knew I was stubborn. This wasn't a realisation that is new to me, but the realisation that I'm too stubborn for my own good in this instance, I really struggle to not see something through. So I'm reading a book series at the minute that I am actually, I think, actively hating. But I just can't bring myself to stop. Like I know I'm reading it on Kindle. So because I keep doing this, where I read the first book a couple of years ago, and I think I got to the end of it, and I was like, that was fine. But I am kind of intrigued to know what happens next. Got the ends in the cliffhanger. The next book was something like €8 on Kindle, and I was like, no, not happening. The next couple of months later, it was a euro, so I got it. And then I waited similarly until this final one was a euro so I could see the series through. And I, first of all, grateful I did, because if I'd waited until it, if I'd bought it when it was about 8 or 9 euro, I would actually be writing to Amazon to ask for a refund because I'm egregiously let down. But because I feel this strongly about it, should I not just stop? I should just put it down. But I have 48%. I have it in my bag right now because I'm going to go read it later on tonight. And I don't know why, because I'm actively, I think, annoyed by it.
I have to ask what it is. I'm intrigued. Can you tell me?
It's like this. If you've ever opened TikTok, you'll have seen it on there somewhere. It's basically every fantasy novel that's ever been written, but repackaged again for the 15th time. And normally I can eat that up, but I'm not sure. It's just like, I'm not sure what the first one's called. I think it's called Reckless or Powerless or Fearless or somethingless.
Rubbish.
Rubbish. Yeah, that's what it should be. And it's basically just like, of course, the main character is... she's special and she's going to change the world and she's going to do so while catching the eye of a brooding, gorgeous young man.
No, step away. Life is too short.
I know, but
you owe this book nothing.
And I've now guessed all of the big things that are going to happen. I've texted a friend of mine that read it and I was like, am I right in guessing that this is what's going to happen? And she was like, this is why I wanted to ask you about it a few months ago. So I even know where it's going, but I feel like I need to just tick it off my list because I've put so much time in.
How many more hours do you think before they helpfully tell you that, don't they?
They actually do.
Do you skip over pages? That's what I do if I don't like something.
Skip.
You can! If I don't like a book...
Well then, would you then not just delete? I'm finished.
Well, I probably want to get to the end. I'd be a bit like, I want to figure out what happened, but I'm not going to give it hours of my life.
But I mean, it's that sunk cost fallacy, isn't it? It's like, I've put this much time in, I should... I can't say I invested. I think I spent a grand total of €3 on the trilogy. But I do feel like I need to just see it through.
The author Dave Tynan did a brilliant piece with Owen Shehan about his book of short stories. Men don't read fiction anymore, and this is one of the reasons why. Because I've always read nonfiction, flick to the end, and go, okay, is this good enough to get me? Yeah, I'm going to follow and read the whole way through. And that's why,
You read the end of the book and then you decide if you're going to start at the beginning.
Yeah, spoilers that way. But do you guys, if you are reading fiction, do you see it unfold in your brain? Because my boyfriend announced that he doesn't and he hates reading fiction for that reason. Whereas I'm watching a film in my brain, like it's...
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people say they don't, but you do.
Yeah.
There you go, you just prefer nonfiction.
Yeah, I'm just lazy.
Okay, we got to go here. Gerard Galway from Off the Ball and Sir Shanley, writer for the Irish Independent. Thanks so much for joining me for Winners and Sinners this week. That is it from us here on The Hard Shoulder. Congratulations, we have made it through the first week back. We just have another 51 to go.
Easy.
We'll be back on Monday at 4 p.m. Thanks to my production team here. Have a lovely weekend.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.